Today's daf is Lamed Aleph, and we're on the top of the daf. The Gemara, let me just remind you, had presented a machlokas between Abaye and Rava about whether Balchov lemafreya hu gova or mikanu lahaba hu gova, which means that if, let's say, Reuven owes money to Shimon, and Shimon collects from Mishubadim, in a case where Reuven defaults on the loan, is the collection of Shimon, who is the Malve, from Reuven the Love, Lemafreya? It means from the time of the Halva, already those Mishubadim were transferred over to Shimon, conditionally, in event that Reuven the Lover does not pay up the Chov. Or do we say no? Only from the moment that Shimon the Malve realizes his rights and collects from the Shubadim, from that moment and on, it's his. And the Gemara said the following, that if, for example, the Lover was Magdish the Nechasim Mishubadim, the Lover himself, or alternatively, the Lova sold these Mishubadim on the open market. Everybody agrees, in this case even Rav agrees, that Asi Malva Vitarif, the Malva has a right to nullify that Hegdesh or that Mecher, because since the Hegdesh and the Mecher took place after the Matmos, after the Halva, meaning after the Shibudim Wachal, the Malva retains rights to collect that object. And therefore, on the top here of Daf Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, Osi Malva Uparik. The Malva has rights to be Poda the Nechasim from Hegdesh, and it's his. Even according to Rav, who says, Mikano Lahaba Hu Gover, but nevertheless, the Shibud itself is powerful enough, even if it's not a full-fledged Kinyan, to block the Lover from his ability to sell the object or to be Magdish the Akdish. This Nan, and the Gemara invokes a Mishnah in Masechta Erechin, in a case where the Lover was Magdish the Nechasim, and let's say these Nechasim were worth less than the debt, is then the Malva comes around, and he wants to collect this object that the Lover was Magdish. Mosif Od dinar upode es hanechasim ha'elu. He has rights to pigeon, to redeem the object from Hegdesh, because the Lover went ahead and was magdish it after the matmos, after the Shibud was chal. And mikar din, according to the strict letter of the law, the Lover, the borrower, he had no rights to be magdish his nechasim because there's a Shibud to the Malva, in lieu of the piron, or the payment back of the chov. So therefore, the malva could certainly take it out of the hands of Hegdesh. The Chachamim made a takana that he should be poda it from Hegdesh with a dover muot, a small token fee, so that people shouldn't get the misimpression, the spectator might mistakenly think that Hegdesh is yotze b'chti, that you can make Hegdesh into chulin without even a pigeon. So they required, in a sense, a perfunctory external act of pigeon with, as we said, a token amount of money. But in really true essence, mitzad ikra din, the Lov had no right to be magdishit. The Gemara says now, ki pligi, we're on the second line. What is therefore the machlokas between Abaye and Rava? Where does it happen afgamina, as we'd say? Dizovin malva, the Kaddish malva. If the Malva himself, the lender, before he actually collected the Shibudim, he went ahead and he was Magdish the Nechasim Mishubadim. Let's say it was a piece of karka, a piece of real estate, and he designated it for Hegdesh. Alternatively, let's say he sold this karka to someone else. Abaye is going to validate whatever the Malva did, whether it was Hegdesh or Mecher. And why is that so? Because if at the end of the day, the Lover, when it came time to pay back the loan, he did not pay back the loan, igloy milsom afreya. Now we know retroactively to be kara b'shusi avikoy, that from the get-go, from the moment of the matan mos, when the money was given over to the lova, the malva already acquired ownership on the mishubadim, the shaper, and therefore he had the valid power le'aktish to be magdish it, shaper zovin, or to sell it. And now, as a result of the malva selling it, or being magdish it, he could no longer collect his debt, because he already collected his debt. But Rava Amarikanu Lahabu Gova, Rava says the Malva did not have rights to this, to ownership rights on this object that was Mishubadim, such that he could have sold it before the moment of Piron, meaning the moment that the Lova defaulted on the loan. And therefore, Kevan de'iu havi le'zuzi, havi misalik le'bezuzi, Rava now demonstrates to what extent the Lova still retains ownership on the Mishubadim. If the Lova has access to liquid cash, he can go ahead to the Malva and say, here, take back the money that I borrowed from you, I'm repaying you, and now the Shibud is mine. All the Nechasim that were Mishubadim belong to me. Ishtakech dehashta kokoni. So it's only from the moment that the Lova defaulted on his loan, that the Malva acquired ownership on the Mishubadim, and if he sold it or his Magdish before that time, then it's not valid. So that now the Malva still has a Chov that the Lova owes him, and he'll go ahead and collect the Chov. So let's just summarize the Machlokes, Abai v'Rav, in the following way. This time, we'll call it A, time B, and time C. Time A is the earliest moment, that is the Matan Mos, and the Malva delivered the cash over to the Lova. Time T2, the Malva went ahead and he sold Mishubadim, or he was Magdish them. And time T3, when it came to the Shas HaPiron, the Lova defaulted on the loan, he had no cash to pay back the Malva. The Malva now collects, according to Rava, he collects from the moment of collection, at time T3, we'll call it C. Therefore, any transaction that he effectuated before that time, at time TB, that's all invalid. According to Abai, on the other hand, from the moment of C and on, l'mafreya, retroactively from the time of A, the Matan Mos, the Malve possesses the Mishubadim, and therefore if at time TB the Malve exercised his ownership rights and either sold or was magdish the object, that's a valid sale and a valid hegdish. At this point in the Gemara, there's going to be a question, what seems to be a contradiction between Rava's position as we stated it and another position that Rava took in another actual case. Umi Amar Rava Hachi, is it possible that Rava holds a Balchov? Is only Gova Mikanu Lahaba Veha Amar Rami Bar Chama? Now, the case that we're about to learn was judged by Rami Bar Chama, and Rava accepted Rami Bar Chama. He added something to Rami Bar Chama, but from the statement of Rava as a qualification of Rami Bar Chama, we'll see that Rava holds l'mafreya hu gove, hence we're in a contradiction. What's the case? So let me say a few words of introduction, because the case itself is a little bit complicated. There's Reuven and there's Shimon. Later on, we're going to introduce Levi into the picture. Reuven and Shimon enter into a very strange, a very unique arrangement, in which Reuven sells a piece of land to Shimon. However, Shimon doesn't have the cash to pay him, and therefore accepts upon himself a chov, as if he borrowed the money, the dmei hasada, let's say the money that he should have paid for purchasing the land, is now an outstanding loan that Shimon owes to Reuven. Reuven is the seller, Shimon is the buyer. Now, this sale took place with what's called achrayus. Achrayus means the following. Let's say I'm going to represent Shimon the buyer. Shimon does not want to buy a field without some sort of security on the field. What does that mean? It could be, unbeknown to Shimon, it's possible that Reuven has some outstanding debts, and the karka, the piece of sadeh, this field that's now being sold to Shimon, is really mishubadim. It's really leaned to some sort of creditor that Reuven owes money to. And what happens then is that since that chov of Reuven to Levi, we'll call him, predated this mechira to Shimon, Shimon is now buying a field that has a lien on it. Today, you go over to the municipality, you want to buy a piece of land, they'll check out, you know, they have computers, and they'll check out the history of this land to make sure that the seller is not selling you something that's a bag of hot air, you know, a balloon, and really it's going to be confiscated by some sort of creditor that he owes money to. There's a mortgage on it and so forth. But in those days, you are pretty much vulnerable to that possibility. So what do we do, or what should the buyer do to protect his own interest that in event that Reuven, the seller, has actually an outstanding loan and a lien to somebody else, who called Levi, on this karka, that Shimon will not be stuck. He doesn't have the money that he paid. He doesn't have the karka as well. He doesn't have the sada. So what he does is, he insists that Reuven sell this land with achrayus. Achrayus means that Reuven backs up this sale and accepts upon himself to reimburse the buyer in event that after the sale, at some point in the future, that land would be confiscated from the hands of the buyer. In a sense, Reuven took upon himself a potential chov to Shimon. Shimon, on the other hand, has a chov to Reuven. Let me explain. Shimon, the buyer, owes the sale price, the sale money, what we call the Dmei Asada, he owes to Reuven, because he took it as a loan, he took it on credit, he never paid the money. So Shimon owes a chov to Reuven. Reuven, on the other hand, owes a chov to Shimon, a conditional chov, that in event that this land will be confiscated by his creditor, by Levi, then he, Reuven, took it upon himself to reimburse Shimon for the sale price. In a sense, there are mutual obligations here going back and forth. So what happens now? Levi comes along and he knocks on the door of Shimon and he says, good morning, Boker Tov, but I have bad news for you. The karka that you bought from Reuven was meshubed to me. Reuven has no money to pay me for a loan that he took from me 50 years ago, and now I'm coming to confiscate the karka. Now, Shimon is in a funny position here. On the one hand, he hasn't yet paid for the karka, but on the other hand, he's very excited about the piece of property, this real estate, this sod, this field. He doesn't want to say goodbye, Charlie, to it. So what does he do? He takes out money from his pocket to the sum, to the tune of the actual chov between Reuven and Levi, and he pays off Levi. And he says, Levi, you know what? What is the sum of money that Reuven owes you? He says, it's 50,000. Okay, here's 50,000. What Shimon had in mind was that instead of paying the price of the field to Reuven, keep in mind he hasn't yet forked over the money, the Dmei Sada, he'll give that same sum of money over to Levi, get Levi off his back, and now he's the proud owner of the karka. Little does he expect that Reuven would come back now and say, wait a second, you never paid me for the karka. Shimon is going to say, what do you mean I didn't pay you for the karka? I saved you by taking off of your back this chov, this obligation. Levi would have confiscated this karka from you. In effect, I was paying your chov. And if I was paying up your chov, then I don't owe you anything. So that's the case. Reuven shemachar sadeh l'Shimon b'achrayus, who's kaf on a love b'milveh, and now the case gets more complicated. Umeis Reuven, Reuven dies. The Asav al Chov de Reuven v'toref le'mishimon. Levi, as we called him, comes to Shimon. He says, you know what? You bought a field that had a lien on it because Reuven owes me a chov. Asa Shimon u'paisei bezuzei. Shimon was not eager to give up the field. After all, you know, this was a field that he had committed himself to pay a lot of money for this field. He doesn't want to give up the field, so he pays off Levi. In his mind, Shimon, instead of forking over the price, the Tmei Asada, to Reuven, to pay his chov to Reuven, he figured he's paying up Reuven's chov. And one hand washes the other. So Rami Bar Chama Paskins in this case, that dinahu, the din in this case, is the following. Asu b'nei Reuven, again, Reuven had passed on, and the b'nei Reuven know, they have a written ledger in their father, the late father's handwriting, that Shimon owes money for the field that he bought. Amri Leila Shimon, they come to Shimon and they say, you have to pay us the money that you owed our father for the Dmei Asada. You never paid up for the Sada. Now, so the Yarshim, the heirs of Reuven, say to Shimon as follows. You're claiming that you paid up our father's chov by being misalek Levi, by getting off the balchov, right? Anan mitaltele shvak avuan gabach. The only money that we had at the moment of the inheritance, meaning at that critical moment when our father passed on, what did our father leave for us in the Yerusha, in the inheritance, such that now we have to pay up our father's debts? Meaning when Levi comes along and Levi wants to collect from Reuven, Reuven is gone, but the Yoshim of Reuven are now victims, so to speak. They have to pay up their father's chov. But the law is they only have to pay their father's chov if at the time of their father's death, the father actually possessed mishubadim, he possessed karka, there was a lien on the karka too, Levi will call him, the balchov, and now at the moment of Reuven's passing, his yarshim, his heirs, now inherit a piece of land that has a shibud on it, has a lien on it. But if, on the other hand, at the moment of Reuven's death, all he had in his possession was what we call metalteli, which are movable objects, such as cash or any other movable object, then there's no shibud on the Bnei Reuven, on the heirs, to pay up a chov from metalteli. And therefore, Anan, our situation, claim the Yorshim, metalteli shavik avun gabach. All our father left over in the Yerusha when he passed on was metaltulin. What's metaltulin? The money, the chov, the debt that you, Shimon, owe him to pay him for the field. The field is no longer in Reuven's possession at the time of his death because he had already transferred it over to Shimon in a sale. All that we have, say the Yarshim, is not the karka per se. We didn't inherit that piece of land. He had already sold that to you. We inherited the chov, the abstract debt that you owe in lieu of payment for the field. That's called metaltali. U'metaltali diyasmi lebal chov lo mishtabde. Shimon, you made a big mistake by being mefayis the bal chov, by paying off that money. Because you thought, in your mind, that you were protecting Reuven, all of the Shalom, his interest by paying off his chov. Well, in truth, Reuven's not alive anymore. So what do you mean you paid off his chov? You paid off our chov as Yorshim? No. You didn't pay off our chov as Yorshim. The Baal Chov has no claim to us. He had a claim to Reuven, but he doesn't have a claim to us because all Reuven left in his possessions were metaltele, meaning the chov that Shimon owed to Reuven in lieu of the payment for the field. And therefore, what are you doing? You're paying up a chov for us? Thank you, but no thank you. I don't need your favor. You didn't accomplish anything on our behalf because the Baal Chov, we'll call him Levi, had no rights to collect from us as Yoshim because we didn't inherit a piece of the Chasim Shubadim of leaned Karka. The Amar Rava, now Rava accepted the ruling of Rabbi Bar Chava, but he came up with what we call an Eitzah, a good recommendation, a piece of advice for Shimon. Why does Shimon need a good piece of advice? He needs a good lawyer. Because Shimon, in effect, is now going to pay twice for the same piece of karka. He paid up Levi, the Baal Chov. Now, the Yarshim of Reuven are coming to force Shimon to pay a second time for that piece of karka in lieu of the debt that they owed to Father Reuven because they never paid, because Shimon never paid for the field. So Rava, in a sense, feels a little bit of compassion for Shimon, and for the sake of justice, it doesn't seem fair that in this case Shimon should have to pay twice for the price of one field. So he comes up with the following recommendation. Ipikiach Shimon. Shimon, if you're wise, listen carefully. I have a very good Eitzah for you. Magbi lehu ara. What you should do is, you should pay back the Yarshim of Reuven with a piece of karka. And then, hadar gavi le minayhu. And now, since Reuven owes you a debt, now let's again go over this. Why does Reuven owe a debt to Shimon? Because Reuven sold the land b'achrayus, and once Levi came and confiscated the land from Shimon, now Reuven owes Shimon a reimbursement for his money under the law of achrayus. Well, guess what? Hadar gavi le minayu. Now Shimon says, I'm going to collect this karka back from you because now Reuven owes me, b'tor achrayus, this karka or its value. So that in effect, what happens is that Shimon gives the karka over to the Bnei Reuven and then he collects it back. So he ends up with the karka. He paid for the karka by paying off Levi, but he doesn't have to pay twice for the karka. The Omer of Nachman Yisovim Shegova Karka Bechova Saviyem Balchov Choser Vegova Osamiyem. Which means that if, let's say, someone borrowed money from Reuven, from the father, and now, after Reuven's passing, the Yarshim come to collect that chov from those who borrowed money from Reuven. However, they have to know that once they collect, let's say, a piece of land, for example, right? They accept that land as payment for a chov that was owed to their father. Now, if their father has any debts, outstanding debts, that he owes to someone else, now we have to introduce not only Levi, but Yehuda as well, right? Then that Yehuda can now come and collect that karka in lieu of the chov that Reuven the father owed to Yehuda. And therefore, in our case, says Rava, applying this principle of Rav Nachman, Shimon would be well advised, if he's a pikeach, to pay his chov to Reuven, meaning the Dmei Asoda, in a piece of land. And then, since now Reuven owes him b'tor sachrayis, he goes back and he collects that piece of land. Says the Gemara, now we're in trouble. Why? Iyamid bishlema, we can understand Rav Nachman's principle, which Rava accepted. If you hold that lemafreya hu gove, if you hold like a bai shita, that a bal chov is gove lemafreya, is amtu lachi as a result. Choser vegova osa mehem. The bal chov could now collect from them, from the Yarshim, meaning when the Yarshim receive and grab, confiscate in payment for a chov that was owed to their father, this karka, now the the Malveh of Reuven comes, right, that creditor, and he takes back the karka. Why? Because this karka that the Yorshim are collecting in lieu of a chov that's owed to their father is l'mafreahu gover. It means they're collecting a piece of karka as if it was in the possession of their father during his lifetime, retroactively, from the time of the giving of the mos. And now it makes sense that this karka, which they inherited from their father, but was already in their father's rishus based on the principle of l'mafreahu gover, now it becomes collectible, it's leaned to the person that we called Yehuda. But if Rava would be consistent with his shita, is amai chosev v'govel samihem? Why does Yehuda, to whom Reuven owed a chov, have a right to collect his karka from the bnei Reuven? Havile kemande zovin yasme nichse domi. It's as if these yisomim now purchased a piece of land. They came into possession of a piece of land posthumously, meaning beyond the death of their father Reuven. And that's not leaned towards Yehuda. Yehuda has no right to claim karka that the Bnei Reuven purchased on the open market. If Yisomim buy karka with their own money, is there any shivu to a balchov? So the Gemara at this point is stuck in a quandary because there seems to be a contradiction between two positions of Rava. On the one hand, Rava disagreed with Abaye and he held but once he accepts the principle of Rav Nachman, which can only be justified based on l'mafreahu gover, Rav is now contradicting himself. So Gemara answers, no. Shani hosam ti omar le ki hechi de mishtabde le lavuchan mishtabdi nami lebalchov da avuchan midrabi nosan. So at this point, the Gemara, in order to explain and justify the psak of Rami Bar Chama that we discussed, which Rava accepted, and Rava actually added his recommendation to Shimon, etc. It's all based on what's called Shibuda de Rabbi Nosan. Very in Choshei Mishpat in Dini Momenis, this is a very famous principle of Shibuda de Rabbi Nosan. And basically, Shibuda de Rabbi Nosan means that if I owe you money, and you owe money to someone else, so Reuven owes to Shimon and Shimon owes to Levi, Levi could come and collect directly from Reuven. You know, like in checkers, you know, you skip over, that's what happens over here. And that's Rabbi Nosson, the sign of Rabbi Nosson, Omer minayin linoshe b'chavero mone, b'chavero b'chavero, motziya mizeh v'nosu l'zeh. So Reuven owes money to Shimon, a mone, 100 zuz, and Shimon owes to Levi, Levi could come and collect directly from Reuven. Tamalom and I derive it from a pasuk in Bamidbar Perkei, V'nasan l'asher Hashem lo. And from this pasuk we learn Shibud the Rab Nosan. Now let's apply Shibud the Rab Nosan in our case. What happens is that Reuven owes money to Shimon, and now Shimon has a right to say the Bnei Reuven, just like these Nechasim are Meshubadim to your father because of the sale, and I owe the Dmei Asada, they're also Meshubadim to myself because of the Achrayus that Reuven took upon a debt that in event that the karka is taken away, he'll pay it back. So basically, Shimon is wearing two hats over here. He is on the one hand mishubad to owe for the Dmei Asada to Reuven, but on the other hand, he is also a creditor who comes to demand payment from Reuven. And therefore, we can skip the whole business and he can collect from himself. That's called Shibuda de Rabbi Nosson. Tanan, we learned it at Mishnah. Now the Gemara is going to see if our Mishnah of Chametz could prove something about the machlokes between Rava and Abaye. Nachri shehil ves Yisrael al chemtzo, the Jew borrows money from a guy. And the Jew has a shibud of chametz. He has some very valuable piece of bread, a long challah, you know, that we serve at a chasana, and he offers it as a shibud to John Paul Jones, who is his creditor, who gave him a loan. Is achra Pesach mutar b'hano. After Pesach, the Yisrael is allowed to enjoy that loaf of bread. And why is that so? Again, we're going to assume that that the guy is going to collect this piece of bread because the Yisrael defaults on the loan. If we accept Abai's position, that collection is retroactive. Therefore, mutaba no. Because we understand that if at the end of the day, Reuven did not pay back John Paul Jones, then John Paul Jones, Lamafreya, retroactively owned this chametz that was meshuba to him for the chov. But if you hold like Rava, mikan l'abu gover, that collection is only from now and beyond. Is amay mutabano? Who owned this loaf of bread until the point after Pesach when Reuven defaulted on the loan? Reuven himself owned it. It belongs to the Lova, according to Rava. Rava says that if the Malva went ahead and sold it during this interim, it would not be a valid sale. Yes, if that be the case, then how could the Mishnah Paskin that Reuven is allowed to enjoy the benefit of what's Chomet Shavar Lova Pesach, he violated Bal Yerom HaYimotzei? And the Gemara answers, Hachamay Askinon Kishehirhino Etzlo. It wasn't just that the Lova Reuven said to John Paul Jones, listen, you'll collect from this chov, from this loaf of bread. He actually delivered the loaf of bread into the hands of the guy, and he took it out of his possession. And this is based on a principle that Amitz Hashem we're going to study in a few minutes called Balchov Kone Mashkon. That it wasn't just a shibud, it was a higher level called a mashkon. And a mashkon is collateral, which is actually given by the Lova into the hands of the Malva, actually delivered him. So this loaf of bread was in the possession of the Malva, and therefore there's no Bal Yiroa Bal Yimotze. We're now up to Lema Kitanoi on the bottom of Daf Lamed Aleph Omed Aleph. And we're going to try to see now if the Machlokas Abai Verova, in fact, is a Machlokas Tanoim in a Braisa regarding Chometz that was used as a Shibud for a Chov. So let's just count up from the bottom of the Omud. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines up from the bottom of the Omud on Lamed Aleph Omed Aleph. Yisrael Shehilva Lenachri Al Chemtzo. Now we have the opposite case that we discussed until now. And John Paul Jones, the guy, is now borrowing money from a Jew. And the guy offers his very fancy, sophisticated, expensive loaf of bread as a shibud. And the Braisa says that there's a machlokas about this. Li'achra Pesach eino over, according to the Tanakama of this Braisa, there's no bal yirah bal yimotze regarding this chametz, and therefore it's mutter after Pesach, because it's owned by the guy. Now, even though the guy owns this chametz, it's technically his, but he gave it as a shibud in lieu of a loan that he took from Reuven. And therefore, Mishum Rabbi Meir Amru, he's the dissenting view, over. Now, it turns out that if the guy does not pay up the chov, then Reuven collects this piece of chametz l'mafreya, and it was his from the time of the Matan Mos. If that be the case, then on Pesach, Reuven owns it, and therefore says Rabbi Meir over. My love, behoka miflegi. What is the machlokes between the Tanakama in this Braisa and Rabbi Meir? Mar Sovar, According to Rabbi Meir Lemafreya, who gofer. Umar sov Rabbi Kanu Lahava, who gofer. So when the guy defaults on the loan, at what point does Reuven, the lender, the malve, acquire ownership on this piece of bread? Is it Lemafreya, and that's Rabbi Meir, and therefore this Bal Yerobai Motze, or is it Mikanu Lahava, and that's the Tanakama? The Gemara says, V'tizbara, you know what? Your logic is not going to help us when we look at the next section in the same brisa, Ema Seifa. The Seifa has the opposite case. Avol Nochri Shehilva LeYisrael Al Chemtzo LeYachar HaPesach Tivri HaKol Over. If it was the Yisrael who received a loan, he was the borrower, and it was the Nochri, the guy who was the lender, the Malveh, and now the chametz of Yisrael was designated as a shibud, leaned in lieu of this chov, is liachar pesach divrei kol over. Everybody agrees, even the chachamim, that after Pesach there's a violation of bal yirah, bal yimotze. The chametz was clearly owned by the Jew. So the Gemara says, v'ifchami boile. What do you mean l'divrei kol? That doesn't make any sense. It should have been dependent upon the same machlokas that you had in the Reisha, when it was the Yisrael who extended a loan to a guy, just that now the Shita should have been in reverse. Why? Lemandi Omer Hasam, according to the Tanakama in the Reisha, who says, Eino Over, because he's holding Mikanu Lahaba who gover, is Hocha Over. Here, if we're going to say Mikanu Lahaba who gover, that means when the Jew defaults on the loan, the Nochri then, from that moment and on, acquires ownership and possession over the Chametz, is Hacha Over. Why? Because we're going to apply the principle of Mikanu Lahaba Hu Gover. And now, when the Yisrael defaults on the loan, at that point, the chametz is transferred over to the ownership of the malveh of John Paul Jones. But during the course of the loan, which means during Pesach, the Yisrael owned the loan. So we're just applying the same principle of the Tanakama, but just in reverse. And now over. Ulamadi Amar Hasbara, according to Rabbi Meir, who said over, because he was applying the principle of Mafreya who gover, Hocha Eino over. Here we would say Eino over, because when the Yisrael in the Sefer defaulted on the loan, the Malveh now collects this loaf of bread, Lamafreya, retroactively, and during Pesach it belonged to the guy and not to the Yisrael. And here we turn to Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. Ela, says the Gemara, you know what? Both Rabbi Meir and the Tanakama hold that mikan ula bahu gover, and the machlokas shinabai varova is not dependent upon this machlokas between the Tanakama and Rabbi Hochmai Askinon. What's the case in the brisa? Kegon sheher hinu etzlo. The lova left the chametz in the house of the malva. So the chametz is now a full-fledged mashkon, its collateral that's being held in the house of the lender. V'kom miflegi, and the machlokas, Tanakam and Rabbi Meir, is how far do we apply the principle of Rabbi Yitzchak? D'yomar Rabbi Yitzchak, minayin lebal chov shekon a mashkon. How do we know that if a lova gives a mashkon, a collateral, over to the malva acquires ownership of the mashkon during the entire period of time of the halva, and therefore if, let's say, the mashkon is lost, the malva is going to have to pay up, or he's going to have to suffer the loss because it's considered his. And this we derive, says Rabbi Yitzchok Shenemar. It says in Parshas Ki Teitzei, I'll read the whole pasuk. Hashev toshiv lo es havot kivo ha-shemesh. Vishachav b'salmoso uberachecha. That the malva returns the collateral to the lova in a case of clothing. He gives it to him, pajamas, so he can warm the lova can warm himself up at night. And this is a great, worthy of a great bracha from Hashem, ulechati et tzedaka. And it's a great act of charity that the malveh gives the mashkon back to the lova, so he'll have something to cover himself with at night when it's cold. Oh, you see here clearly that the malveh owns the mashkon. And therefore, when he gives it over to the lova, it's an act of tzedaka. It's like charity. It's like taking money out of your pocket. If you're going to take the opposite position and be argumentative, is then staka minayin? How can you call it staka when the lov is really the owner of the mashkan? You see clearly that the malve, the lender, is the one who owns the mashkan. Mikan, from here we derive the conclusion of al chov shekonem mashkan. Is tana kama sovar? Hani mili Yisrael mi Yisrael. According to Tanakhama, we have to strictly restrict the scope of Rabbi Yitzchak's principle of Bal Chov Kodol Mashkin only applies when a Yisrael lends money to a Yisrael. Huda Karina Bey, then we can apply the principle and the Pasuk of Luchati et Tzedakah. And there's an act of Tzedakah on the part of the Malva when he gives back the Mashkin to the Lover. Aval Yisrael mi Nachri. If a Yisrael lends money to a guy, and the guy gives him a mashkon, lo kani. The Tanakhama holds, in such a case, the Yisrael does not acquire ownership over the mashkon, because there's no mitzvah of tzedakah here, such that now we would say, bal chov konu mashkon, and he's giving tzedakah to the guy. So therefore, in the case where the chametz is b'rishus nachri, remains in the rishus nachri, and that's why the Tanakhama holds that there's no violation of Bal Yiroh Bayim Matzeh. Because in the case of a Nachri, we don't apply the principle of Bal Chov Koneh Mashko. Rabbi Meir, Savra Meir disagrees. He says, Kal v'chomer, Uma Yisrael mi Yisrael Kone Yisrael mi Nachri lo kolshken. If the Nachri borrows money from the Jew and he gives the Jew of Mashko, and isn't it even more understood, how much more so should we apply the principle of Balchov Kone Mashkon? When do we not apply the principle of Balchov Kone Mashkon? So again, right at this point, we understand that if according to Rabbi Meir, we're going to apply the principle of Balchov Kone Mashkon here, then when the guy borrows money from the Jew and gives chametz to the Jew as a mashkon, the Jew now violates Bal Yiroh Bayim Matzeh, because Rabbi Meir applies the principle of Bal Chov Kodeh Mashkon in this case where the Yisrael receives a mashkon from a guy. Oh, but what about the opposite case, in the reverse? Aval Nachri Shehilva Es Yisrael Al Chemtzo. What happens if the guy lends money to the Yisrael and the Yisrael gives a piece of chametz as a mashkon to the Nachri? Is the Achra Pesach Tiriakol over? In this case, certainly, even Rabbi Meir would agree that we don't apply the principle of Balchov Kodeh Mashkon. Hasam Vadei Nachri Miyisrael Lo Kani. We're not going to assume that the guy has rights to acquire ownership over the mashkon. And therefore, this mashkon that's given by the Yisrael, the chametz is designated for payment, belongs to the Yisrael. And therefore, even Rabbi Meir is going to agree that in this case, you violate Bal Yiroh Bayim Matzeh. Tnan, the Gemara had quoted our Mishnah earlier. Nachri Shehilva Yisrael Chemtzo Achra Pesach Mutar Bano. If the guy lends money to the Jew, and the Jew designates a piece of chametz as collateral, then it belongs to the guy, and therefore it's mutar b'ano, there's no violation of Bal Yiroh Bayim Matzeh. Well, how do we understand such a thing? We said that balchov mikanu labo gover. So why would this chametz be mutar? The moment that the guy acquires ownership over this chametz is only the moment when the Israel defaults on the payment, the repayment of the loan. If that be the case, the chametz belongs to the Israel during the entire interim period while the loan is outstanding. Therefore, there should be a violation of Bal Yiroh Bayim Matzeh Shvi Asur Bano. And the Gemara had answered that we were discussing a case where the mashkon of the Israel was actually handed over to the base Nachri, and that's where the chametz was. So the Gemara now asks, Nehi Nami Deir Hinuet. So even though I grant you, as we described it on Omen Aleph, that the Jew actually transferred the chametz over to the Rishus of the guy, but Ha'amrit, We just finished establishing that Nochrim Yisrael lo kani, that a guy, with regard to the Mashkan of Yisrael, has no rights to own it. And everybody agrees to that. So now we're back to square one. We don't understand how our Mishnah could say that the Chametz is mutar b'anah. And the Gemara answers, lo kasha hadi omer lemei achshav. The Mishnah is talking about a case where not only did the Lova, the Yisrael, say to the guy, the Malva, here, take this Chametz, but he even said, mei achshav. He said, now, when you're extending the loan to me, the Chametz is yours. From now, from the moment of the Matan Mos. That was the way it was stipulated. Allowing himself, of course, the rights to pay up the Chov and redeem and get back his Mashkon. But because he added the stipulation, mei achshav, therefore the guy now, from the time the Matan Mos, acquires ownership over the Chametz. But the Braisa is talking about a case, the Lo Amar Lo Miachshav, so that when the Lova gave a Mashkan over to the Malva, he did not add the word Miachshav, and he gave it like a Mashkan. And he said, look, if I don't pay you, then you can collect from this Mashkan. Therefore, in the case where the Nochri extended a loan to the Yisrael, and the Yisrael gave his Chametz as a Mashkan, everybody agrees that it's Osir after Pesach, because the guy is not Kona the Mashkon, and there was no stipulation of Me'ach. Now the Gemara asks, we know Temra the Shani Le, Ben Hecha the Omar, Me'ach, Ben Hecha the Lo Omar Me'ach. What's your source, your basis for this distinction? Did he say Me'ach or did he not? And it's based on a Braisa, the Sanya will enter the Braisa, Nochri Shehirhin Paspurni. Paspurni is a large oven and a large piece of bread. Eitzel Yisrael. So now what happens is that before Pesach, the guy brought over this very large piece of chametz to the Yisrael as a mashkon for a chov that the guy owed to the Yisrael. Eino over. The Yisrael does not violate Bal Yiroah, Bal Yimotzeh on Pesach, because according to this Braisa, a Yisrael does not acquire ownership of a Mashkon from a Nochri, which reflects the Shita of the Tanakhama that we had earlier. But the Im Amarlo, if the Nochri said at the time that he gave the Mashkon over to Yisrael, Hig Atich, which is another word of saying that the Mashkon is yours, over. Now the Yisrael violates Bal Yiroah Bal Yimotzeh because he acquired ownership on Pesach, on this piece of lovely, expensive chametz, by virtue of the fact that the guy, the lover, had said he got it. Maishna reisha maishna seifa, lav shmamino, shani heichad yomim miachshav, leheichad lo omer miachshav shmamino, that whether or not the Yisrael could be kona, will be kona, mashkov from a guy, depends upon whether he said miachshav or he did not say miachshav. And now, right before the next Mishnah, we have a little mini-sugya. Tana Rabbanan. This is an independent sugya. Chanush shel Yisrael, u'melai shel Yisrael, u'po'alei nochri nichnasim l'sham. The situation in the reisha of this braisa is where the Jew owns the store. Not only does he own the store, he owns all the merchandise in the store. However, there are goyim who work there. And now, chametz shenichnas nimtza sham achar Pesach. What happens if after Pesach we find chametz? Do we assume that that chametz belongs to the store owner, who's the Israel, and then it's chametz shavu Pesach it's also? Or do we assume it was brought in there by the Poalim, who are working inside this factory? And the Braisa establishes, osur b'ano. This is chametz shavu Pesach. Why? V'yein tzarech lom v'achila, it's osur both v'achila n'ano. Why? We're going to assume that this chametz was sold in the store, and it's a store that sells chametz, and since both the store and the merchandise that's being sold in the store belongs to the Yisrael, we assume that it was chametz shel Yisrael. But chanush shel nochri umalai shel nochri, in the reverse, where the store is owned by a goy, and all the chametz, all the merchandise in the store is owned by the goy. Upoel Yisrael nechnasim v'yotzim l'sham. And who works there during the course of this period of time? It is Jewish workers. Is then chametz shenimsa sham achra pesa mutba achilu tzarich l'banah. We're going to assume that the chametz is one of those boxes of merchandise that's owned by the goy, and therefore it's not chametz shavul of a pesach. The Mishnah establishes chametz shenofel of mapoles harehu kimavor. If debris falls on top of chametz, the chametz is now buried, then it's as if the chametz was destroyed, and there's no need to dig up the chametz in order to destroy it. There's no violation of al yiro by yimatzar. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer, however, he stipulates that kol shein hakelev yochel lechapes achra. It's got to be buried so deep below the debris that the kelev, even a dog, will not be able to smell it out. Because if you want to establish that it's biur, it's already mavur, it has to be so buried by this avalanche that even a dog can't get access to it. And the Gemara says the following. Omar Rav Chisda says that even in a case where the debris is so heavy and the chametz is so deeply buried, nevertheless, tzarch levatel belibo. We're always afraid that maybe during the course of Pesach, somehow the debris will be taken away and the chametz below will be exposed and it'll be violating Bal Yiro Bayim Matzah. So just to be extra careful, he should recite bittul. And bittul, as we said many times, will prevent the violation of Bal Yiro Bayim Matzah b'deraisa. Bebitul ba'alma sagi. Tana, we have a braisa. Kamach fisas hakelev. You've told me that if it's buried below the point where the kelev could dig it out, then it's mavur. How deep is it? How much debris actually fell on it so that I can measure it and determine that a kelev would not be able to find it? Shlosha tfach. Three tfach. How do we square this with the statement of Shmuel? That ksafim, if let's say you give me money, and I am the shomer, you're the mafkid, depositing money in my possession, and I took upon myself responsibility to protect your money. Elam shmira elabekarka, the perfect ideal protection for money in order that it shouldn't get lost or stolen is to dig it up and hide it below the ground. Do we need that he has to dig three tfachim below the ground? I mean, that's asking much from the shomer. Amalei hacha mishum recha. Ravashi says to Ravachi, you're making a mistake. There's no valid analogy between chametz, kemavur, and shmira in ksafim. Why? Because there, in the case of chametz, it's got a reach. And the keen sense of smell of the dog, I mean, the dog didn't have COVID, so he's able to dig up chametz based on smell, even though it's three tefachim below the ground. But hasa mishum ichsuye me'enehu. In the case of ganovim, where you're afraid they'll steal the money, just make sure it's concealed, and they won't know about it. Lo boy shlosha. V'kama amarafram bar papa misichra tefach. So a good buddy, Rafram, one of the very famous sons of Rav Papa, he came from a place called Sichra, he tells us, then all you have to do is dig one tefach, and you're a shomer who has fulfilled his achrayas, his responsibility, because we're not dealing with something that will be smelled out by a dog. And now, just to end the daf for today, we will study a Mishnah which deals with what's called Trumas Chametz. Now, Truma, as you know, belongs to the Kohen. And a zar, a non-kohen, is not allowed to eat the truma. If he went ahead and eat the truma, he has to pay what's called keren v'chomesh, which means that he has to pay the value of the truma, which is called keren, the principal, because he really stole it from the kohen. And he's got to add a chomesh. Okay, there's a note here that if he stole it b'mezid and he had asra, then he gets malchus because he violated the avera of a zar lo yochal kodesh. And once he gets malchus, then we apply the principle of kim levi ramine lo kaveinu mishal. Okay, now if the zar ate this truma b'shogeg, then it comes under a whole different law, because a gazlan only pays keren, whereas if you take your zar and you take truma that belongs to a kohen and you eat it, you pay keren v'chomesh, and that upgrades the nature of the payment from compensation for theft to what's called a kapara. Kapara for the avera of eating truma. You're a zar that ate truma. And that's why you pay the extra chomesh, which is 0.25. Because that's called milah. In other words, you add a chomesh, which is really one quarter. Now, if he steals peros that achulim, and they took out truma maser from it, therefore it's chulin, then when he pays for eating truma by replacing it with chulin, the chulin automatically become truma. Now, what happens if this truma is already chametz? Ha'ochel trumas chametz b'pesach. If it was b'shogeg, now keep in mind that chametz is also b'anah, so it really has no value. But the Mishnah's Mechadesh, a tremendous chiddush, that Mishalim Keren V'chomesh, that even though this Trumas Chometz is valueless, he still has to pay for it. Why? Because that payment is a kapara. It's not being paid as Tashlume Gzela. Gzela would not be applicable here because the Chometz is valueless. It's also by no. But since he's paying B'toras Kapara, he's got to replace the volume of the truma that he ate plus another chomesh. But b'mezid, if he violated this iser of zarus b'mezid deliberately, then potu mitashlumin. He's not given the option of a kapara. He would only have to pay b'toras gazlan, and there's no gzela, there's no shavius, no value to the chomesh. It's also vana. U meshalim t'mei etzim. Now, Tmei Eitzim means, let's say this Truma is not just Chametz, but it's also Truma Tmeya. And now the halacha is that with regard to Truma Tmeya, you're allowed to use it as fuel, and therefore it has a value. Even though it's Truma Tmeya, it has a value, and that value is that it is fuel for a fire. But he's potter from Tmei Eitzim in this case. Why? Because it was Chametz. And if it was Chametz, then he is Chayev Kares. And the Truma itself is Asur Bana as Chametz. Therefore, it's valueless. And now you want to tell me that it does have value because he can use it as fuel, but he can't use it as fuel because even though Truma Tmei could be used as fuel, and it's Mutter in that Anov Hadloko, but nevertheless, this happens to be Trumas Chametz, and if it's Trumas Chametz, it's valueless. You can't use it even as fuel. And this will lead us to the Gemara that quotes a Mishnah in Trumos. We'll just very quickly, officially we have 1.5 minutes left, so we'll quickly get a flavor of the Mishnah in Trumos. And the Mishnah is talking about a case of a Zar, a non-Kohen, a Ochel Truma B'Shogeg. Is Mishalim Keren V'Chomesh. Correct, as we said before, his payment is not a compensation for Gzela, but it's a Kapara, and if he violated this Avera B'Shogeg, he needs a Kapara, and therefore he pays Keren V'Chomesh. Echad HaOchel, this will apply to someone who eats, let's say, a loaf of bread that was made of Chitim that are Truma, V'Echad HaShose, or let's say you had a beverage that was Truma, classically that would be Yayin. And here we turn to Daf Lamed Beis, Kaminyan Lev. We have to open up our hearts. The Echad HaSach, or he didn't drink the wine of truma, but rather he anointed himself, he smeared his body with shemen shel truma, because again, there are two species of fruits that generate truma d'oraisa, and that's zeisim v'anovim, and echad truma t'mea, v'echad truma tahora mishalem chomesh. It matters not whether or not this truma is tahora or t'mea. He will always have to pay, in addition to the principal, which is called Karen, an additional payment of a chomesh, v'chein, and furthermore, chumsha de chumsha, a chomesh of a chomesh. In other words, when he pays up his chomesh, as we said before, that payment automatically becomes truma, and now the chomesh becomes truma as well, and if he eats on the second round, that payment, then, again, it's b'shogeg, then he pays another chomesh on top of the chomesh. And that leads us to Ibailahu.
Now, even though the Torah says in the parash of Truma v'ish ki yochal kodesh, and ki yochal indicates achila, but shtia is included in achila, and this is a sugya in Yoma on daf ayin vav, in the parsha of Nasata, Kesem Kol Asher Tavas Nafshecha V'Bokor V'Tzonu B'Yayinu B'Sheikh V'Chalta Sham, and that indicates that the word Achila includes Shasiya. Now the Shir of Shtia in terms of Truma to be Chayev for a Zar that drinks Truma of Yayin is a Kizayis, and it's exactly identical with the Shir of Achila. Now, when we interpreted this Mishnah, we interpreted it based on Rashi. However, there is another possible explanation of the Mishnah, and that's based on the Gemara later on in Daf Lamed Gimel, that an ochel truma v'shogeg pays lefi damim v'lo lefi midah, he actually pays the market value. The Mishnah says that ha'ochel trumas Chametz b'shogeg pays Karen v'chomesh. That's because the Tanavah Mishnah holds that Chametz on Pesach is mutar b'ano, like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and therefore he pays the Domim, which have a value on the open market because it's mutar b'ano. And when it says in the Sefer that if he eats the Trumas Chametz b'mezid, he doesn't pay Tashlumin or Demeitzim, even though Truma has Domim now, because we're holding the Chametz for Pesach's Mutabana, that's only because the reason why he's exempt from payment is because he's Chayv Misa. And our Mishnah holds like Rab Nechunya ben Akana that even Chayv Krisus are Potamina Tashlumin, even though it's a Chiv Bidei Shamayim. Or alternatively, if let's say there was Asra for Malkus, Eino Loke Mishali. The Gemara actually vacillates back and forth between these two approaches to interpret our Mishnah. Now, Rashi says that Shogeg Mezid in our Mishnah is in relationship to the Iser Zar Betruma. As far as the Iser Chometz is concerned, it makes no difference whether he's a Shogeg or Mezid. The Mishnah and the din of the Mishnah would not change if he knew he was eating Chometz and violating an Iser Kares, or if he didn't know that, because even if he's Chayev Mises Bezdin and Mammon, and if he's Potter Mil Shalim Mammon because of Kim Leib the Ramine, but that only applies to Mises Bezdin. But if we assume that in the case of Mises Kares, it doesn't apply, then even if he was b'mezin and he's chayv kares, he still has to pay tashlume truma according to that man d'yomar. Now, in the Mishnah of tashlumen on achilas truma b'shogeg, there are two dimensions. There's tashlume gzela and tashlumen aboim l'shem kapara on the chet of achila. And that's why he has to pay dafka from peros chulin, which become truma. And that's all part of his kapara. And the Gemara is going to clarify that with regard to tashlume gzela, those are determined by the value market value of the object that was stolen. That's called lefi damim mishalem. But with regard to tashlumin that come as a kapara, those are determined by the kamut, the actual volume of truma that he ate. That's called lefi midah mishalem. And he has to pay peros that will replace the midah of the peros that he ate. Therefore, even though the truma here is chametz and it has no value in the market, nobody lost anything. He's not chay b'din midin tashlume gzela, but rather he's chay midin kapara for eating truma. So somebody who ate on Pesach chametz of his friend, which was not truma, he doesn't pay at all, because there it's only a chiv gzela, it's not truma, and it has no value. One last point here is from the Rosh Yosef, who says that the Mishnah holds against the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda and Tmura, who's of the opinion that chametz for Pesach, because it has a din of sreifa, therefore the mitzvaso is matir efer, and that gives it a certain value. But rather, our Mishnah reflects the sheet of the Chachamim of Yehuda that Efer is not mutter, hashpesosel kol dovar. Otherwise, Trumas Chametz would have some minimum value on the market because of its Efer. Okay, then this is where we're going to stop, and in Mitzvah tomorrow, we'll learn Beis Hashem, Daf Lamed Beis, Kiminyan Lev, and we'll start with the Boilu on the third line.